You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation. I'm David Ermillo, credentialed reporter and the host of Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Please make sure to subscribe to the show if you haven't already, wherever you listen to podcasts to get the latest episodes. Today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On rooms. Locker Room is changing the way we talk about sports. A lot to get to today. Filming this, I don't know why I said filming, recording this on a Monday, and the trade deadline just days away, hours away right now from when the trade exception that Miami currently has likely to expire. I don't think it's going to get used. There are rumors about players swirling from all over the place, players around the league, guys like Aaron Gordon, Kyle Lowry, and more linked to Miami in some ways or just floating out there as potential trade options. I'll try to break it all down and what Miami's line of thinking might be, you know, what their approach to the trade deadline is, because I don't think there's any clarification, and anybody who has any kind of conviction about this is flatly making something up. Like, nobody knows. I made this point via Twitter. Like, we're all hyping up Kyle Lowry and everybody else, and there's interest there. I don't doubt that Miami is doing their due diligence and doing their homework, but we've never seen Miami's moves played out. The most obvious one was Jimmy Butler. And there's always a game going on back and forth between media, agents, a team that is looking to move a player, angling for, you know, some way of building leverage, because this is, you know, a business here where they're talking about exchanging players and assets and things of that sort. It's an uncomfortable side of the league and its coverage. It's fun to discuss when you're looking at your team in a sense of, well, I could get such and such player and make my team better and compete for a title right away. Sure, I get it. But it's also a little odd to talk about players and human beings in such a way. Let's save that conversation one I've had before. As far as trade talk is concerned, Miami rarely operates publicly. Jimmy Butler is the last time it happened, and I think that's because Tom Thibodeau and the Minnesota Timberwolves does things differently than Miami. They do things much more publicly, and that's partly why they have failed as often as they have over the course of their 30-something years. They haven't had the success Miami has. They don't have anywhere near the stability Miami has. They're always trying to seek leverage. They use Miami's interest against them and wound up trading Jimmy to Philadelphia anyway. Of course, once free agency happened, it still was a secret that Miami just came from out of nowhere. They were absolutely the dark horse. I remember a media member from the Houston area talking about it being a foregone conclusion. Jimmy is joining the Rockets. If not the Rockets, it has to be the Lakers, right? Or the Clippers, because those are clear contenders. Doesn't seem to matter. Jimmy chooses Miami. This is the place for him. And now he's here. And so that impacts how Miami makes decisions. They always do things secretly. And that's why I'm not so sure the Lowry trade will take place. It could. And I'll get into that later on. But I did also want to get to some of the questions that were sent in following Sunday's loss to the Pacers, an unfortunate loss that's kind of hanging over everything, especially when you're talking about whether or not Miami makes a trade. I think fans are a lot more eager to make a move now, having lost three games in a row and two to the Indiana Pacers. And so it's a lot more, there's a lot more pressure from fans. I don't know that the front office is making this. Before I answer any questions, I do want to get into that again. I've talked about this before, and the trade doesn't happen immediately. The last three games aren't the barometer for whether or not Miami will make a trade. That's not how it operates. These conversations are ongoing and have been ongoing for a while. You judge interest. You make a call. Makes it sound friendly. You reach out to general manager X. Shoot the shit with him for a little bit. Talk. You know, shop. And, oh, hey, how's the family? How are the kids? Things of that sort. And then you kind of just figure out what they're looking to trade. And, of course, it is a negotiation from that point forward. Well, you know how it is, Pat. We really like him here. And, you know, he's had a rough year, et cetera. But, you know, we're always listening for offers. What have you got? Back and forth, back and forth. All right, well, let me mull it over, talk it over to everybody internally, and we'll get back to you. You have another call a couple weeks later, and so on and so forth. It's not like this immediacy where you pick up, and I've made this jokingly before, you know, you don't pick up a red phone that's flashing in a darkened room and call General Manager X and say, get me Kyle Lowry, and then make it happen right away. Like, there has to be some back and forth there, some figuring out what they're trying to do. And again, from Toronto or any team that's involved in a trade, their perspective is always like, well, okay, I know your offer. Let me see if anybody's willing to match it. And you just kind of float that out there to other teams that may or may not be interested. You reach out. You say, look, we're moving this guy. You have any interest? Maybe. It depends on what you're offering and how much you're willing to accept in exchange and so on and so forth. If you're a good general manager, you're doing your due diligence. You're checking up with everybody. You're following around. You're asking all sorts of questions. Maybe this seems obvious to all of you listening to it. I don't think it is, because Twitter general managers hop on the ESPN trade machine and get a deal done within minutes, seconds maybe. And of course, that's far from the reality. That's not to say it's not a fun exchange. Look, I've been there before. I've done this. I know how exciting it can be to plug in names and numbers and say, oh, wow, it's a success. You've improved your team's win chances by 8. That's awesome. It doesn't necessarily mean that that's how it's going to happen. In fact, very far from it. But I did want to get to some of those questions, even though they were about Sunday's game. I'll just touch on them briefly before moving on to the next segment, where I talk about Aaron Gordon, the latest Toronto Raptors rumors, and much, much more. This question comes in from Juanfer. He asks, why Trevor Ariza and not Andre Iguodala at the end of the game on Sunday? Also, Spo seems to have forgot about Max Strus. Well, legitimate points there. I'm not sure. I think you're trying to get a little sense for what Trevor Ariza might do. I think Ariza is probably viewed, even from the Heat perspective, as a little better offensive option, and you're looking at a time when you need points. I think defensively, he probably offers something similar in that he is a long-rangey body that can switch and guard players 3 through 5. I think Iguodala is probably a little bit more mobile at this point just because he's been in regular game shape for the last year, as opposed to, well, maybe not the last year, but the last year. What am I talking about? He was acquired by Miami in February of last year. So, yes, it has been a year. Time is strange nowadays. Ariza, having not played since last March before the hiatus took place, probably not quite in the same level of shape. But I guess Eric Spoelstra made his determination. He felt comfortable with it. I don't know that it was necessarily a factor. I don't know that Ariza got any shots towards the end of the games. I don't think Iguodala would have gotten any shots either. He's a clutch option on occasion, but he's down. I mean, he's not on that list. You're going with Jimmy. You're going with Gorn. You're going with Tyler. Probably going with Duncan if he's out there on the floor, which likely has not been the case. And then you probably go to Iguodala too, but I don't know that Ariza or Iguodala are going to get those shots in waning moments. So I'm not sure. And as far as forgetting about Strus, there are limitations there. I think he's just not the best defensive player either. He tries hard. He's probably no worse than either Hero or Goran at this stage in his career. And so I'm not sure why he doesn't get that playing time. Gabe Vincent did. I think there's a limitation to what Max does. Either the shot is falling, and if that's the case, he's a factor out there. And if the shot isn't following, he doesn't do much else. He's not creating plays for others. He's not really a ball handler. He's not a shot creator. I don't know. I talked about this in my recap of the game on Sunday. Suppose the rotations are a little too fixed for my taste. I feel like, yes, you want to have guys get some consistent playing time, some understanding of what their role is. But guess what? That goes out the door. Like, that has to change. And I'm no NBA coach. I don't know for certain. I can't say that it's just as easy as just plugging in a player and hoping they succeed. But there has to be some way of getting some guy to contribute out there. You know, if Duncan's struggling, if Tyler's struggling, if somebody else is out there and you've got other complementary players that can handle the ball, you don't need Tyler out there if his shot's not falling. What's he doing out there? He's struggling on defense, not making the right pass, making the wrong pass. If that's the case, put Strus out there for a couple three-pointers. That makes the difference, and all of a sudden you don't have to go into overtime. You don't lose to Eric Sumner or I don't even know which one of the Holiday brothers. Justin Holiday it was. It's not TJ McConnell, walking over your grave twice over a weekend. So this next question comes in from Innkeeper. Is it better to have faith, I guess, in the team and ride out a combined shooting slump? It's hard to understand exactly how the question was meant to elicit a response. My feeling is that you do both. You try to have faith that they're turn it around, and you also have to ride out the combined shooting slump. I mean, that's just the case. It's you hope that they're going to figure it out, and if they don't, then you have to make a move anyway. I you can't wait too long either because you've got 3 days before the deadline takes place. So there's not a lot of time, not a lot of options here. Next question comes in from Ryan. He says, 7 games in 10 days, that's the cause of the shooting slump? Question mark. Legs look tired, not worried about this team. They're not shooting 24% from three when rested. Fair points. Counterpoint, they're never going to get the rest. Eric Spoelstra was routinely putting the team through shooter rounds during their win streak or when they were winning 11 out of 12 games. Of course, they got the all-star break sandwiched in between, but they were still going to shooter rounds regularly. And I don't think it's shooter rounds of the past. Shooter rounds of the past, and believe me, I've been there when PR tells me, oh, be there around 12 o'clock, and we don't actually talk to Spo or whoever's available until much, 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 much later. Those shoots, those sessions, those practice sessions routinely go much past any time expectation there. So the shooter runs are probably a walkthrough, kind of just a practice session, light work, you know, going over some key points of the game, things of that sort. Just keeping yourself sharp in this season when nobody is practicing because the NBA is a greedy, muddy, grubbing corporation. And so you can incorporate practices as much as you'd like to. And that being the case, you have to try and get whatever work you can as soon as you can get it. Now, they're never going to get rested. They're going to have games every other day. They have 9 back-to-backs. They've already played a couple since the All-Star break. They've got a couple more this week, Tuesday and Wednesday. They're not going to get rest. And so it's about trying to find ways that you can get the most out of 36-year-old Goran Dragic and 37-year-old Andre Iguodala and 35, nearly 36-year-old Trevor Ariza and on and on. If your best bet is riding on Jimmy Butler, who's going through nagging injuries and has for over a year, that's not ideal. That's a concern. And so you have to try to bolster your roster, make changes, play guys differently. Like Spo showed flexibility in the Orlando bubble, something I talked about before. And then this season, I was hoping he'd be able to replicate that. That has not been the case. He has struggled with that, hasn't seen exactly how to play guys the right way, in my opinion. I'm not criticizing him necessarily, but I am making a public plea. Get somebody else in there. What's the damage? You're going to lose having Tyler Herro out there. Why not get Gabe Vincent out there in clutch situations? Why not get, you know, Max Strus in there in the middle of the third quarter when Herro and Olynyk are struggling, when Duncan Robinson is struggling? Like, I know they're not the same player. Maybe it's not so easy. Maybe I'm being very simplistic about this, but what's the risk? Get somebody else in there, get them a break, give them a chance to rest, and maybe Max Strus can save the day for you. It's certainly possible. We've seen it before. Maybe Vincent has that big game. He went 3 of 4 from three-point range. He was the only reason Miami shot 24%. They would have shot below 20% if not for him. So I'm a little confused by all this, and I'm not sure exactly what to make of it. I've maintained positivity all year round. I still think they're a good team. I still think they're going to figure out a way out of this. But at the same time, if you're looking for home court advantage, if you're looking for every potential edge, and you don't want to face a retooled Brooklyn team in the first round or even a hungry, revenge-seeking Bucks team in that first round, then do what you can to build as many wins as possible. If your credo, if you're constantly preaching, as Spo always does, building positive habits in the second half of the season, well, hell, man, then start building them, you know? And those positive traits usually come with wins along the way. This next question, actually this last question of this first segment, comes from Heat Vlogspot. Who are you paying this summer, Duncan Robinson or Kendrick Nunn? Well, the way this trade deadline is shaping up, we might not have to answer that question. But I'll get into it in the next segment when I talk about Aaron Gordon, the Toronto Raptors, and answering a couple more of your listener questions here on the number one Miami Heat podcast for the latest news, rumors, and analysis. This episode is brought to you by Locker Room, the first social audio platform made for sports fans. The app is free to download. Once you're in, you can talk to me, other fans, athletes, insiders in real time about your favorite team or sport. You can, you know, it's a perfect place to start a conversation about the league. You just kind of join in there and you'll find other fans like you on Locker Room. I'm involved in a couple of Heat-related chats. And let me tell you, you guys are so passionate about your team and your sport. Why not just go to Locker Room and find other like-minded fans? You can always engage in more conversations. You can always ask questions, kind of just bounce ideas back off each other. So go download the free Locker Room app now, currently available on all iOS devices, and be sure to create a profile, link your Twitter, and join the NBA or group for the latest league updates. And just make sure that you get the most out of the experience, because I know you love talking about basketball. You love listening about it from me. So go talk about it yourself as well at Locker Room. It's changing the way we talk about sports. And if you're looking for a change to your car, your truck, then let me tell you, the best place for you to go is rockauto.com. I hate going into an auto parts store, not knowing exactly what I need, looking at the person behind the counter, and they're looking at me like, what is this guy even talking about? I get embarrassed. It's just uncomfortable. And then they have to look for parts in their computer. Why? I can do that from home. I've got access to computers with access to rockauto.com on my phone or on my laptop. You can choose from hundreds of manufacturers and their easy-to-use site, and you get everything you need with just a few easy clicks. They've been doing this for 20 years. Why spend more for the exact same parts at a chain store or car dealership? RockAuto.com's low prices are the same for everybody. So go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. They go to the section that says, how did you hear about us? And write Locked On so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's RockAuto.com. Get all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes with Locked On Today podcast. Host Peter Bukowski updates you on the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. Peter's got his work cut out for him this week with the NBA, man. I'll tell you, just a lot going on around the trade deadline. And every team seems like they're involved in some way. No clarity whatsoever. I got to be honest with you. Like, the insiders, and you know who they are. The Shams, the Wojes, the San Amix, those guys, they are all working overtime. Even good friend Keith Smith. He gets some nuggets here and there, and these are guys you definitely want to follow, especially Keith around the Orlando team. He can dig a lot about what's going on with Aaron Gordon. He knows that front office very well. And this is just a tough one to figure out. Like, I've talked about this before on here. This season is so tough to determine who the buyers and sellers are. Even at this late state, you know, teams are still thinking, well, we might be one piece away. You take the Toronto Raptors, for example, and I don't think they want to trade away Kyle Lowry. I don't think they necessarily want to trade away Norm Powell, but they might be forced to. If Kyle goes into that front office, he talks to Masai Ujiri and says, you know what, I'm looking for a change of pace. I want to compete for the last couple of years of my career. I want to go to a team. I want to play at home in Philadelphia, or I want to play with my good friend Jimmy Butler in Miami. Those seem like the two teams that are most interested in acquiring Lowry's services. I think Toronto's GM has to listen and make the change happen because Kyle is such a beloved figure. He's stuck with that team through losing seasons. He's been the heart and soul of that team for a long, long time. It's going to be weird for them to be able to move on without him. I talked to Katie Heindel, who is a Raptors fan. Of course, she's a great reporter, writer. And I asked her, you know, if the trade does happen, please come on the show. He said, well, you're going to have to give me a couple weeks. That was her response, because I'm going to be pretty heartbroken about it. That's how much Lowry is beloved by those people, which is why Miami makes that move. Not only is he still effective, even at his age, he still takes that charge. He still makes the big play. He's still a really solid playmaker, rebounder for his size. He hustles. He's tough. He's tenacious. He's gritty. He's everything you want out of an undersized guard, and he still finds ways to contribute at an extremely high level. He is perfect for Heat culture. His winning attitude, his championship experience would be a huge boost for Miami. And if you could find a way to add a player like Norm Powell, who is an inconsistent, pretty solid scorer and all-around player, I think you do it. Now, I feel neither interested nor equipped to get into that trade machine mentality of saying, oh, Andre Iguodala plus Kelly Olynyk plus X player plus X draft pick will get this deal done. Because honestly, I couldn't have told you that Myers Leonard in a second round pick would be enough to get Trevor Ariza out of Oklahoma City. I don't think anybody saw that deal coming, and I don't think anybody can project what the right deal is. Like, I don't think Norm Powell was on the table for Miami, and now apparently, according to Heat Twitter and even some people who are Heat Twitter reporters, they're all saying that Powell and Lowry to Miami is almost a done deal, and I don't see it right away. Again, as I've mentioned before, they've always operated in secret. I just don't see that it's happening right now. As far as the Gordon news is concerned, Aaron Gordon in Orlando, Sam Amick over at The Athletic reporting that Gordon has officially requested a trade from the Orlando Magic. They're going nowhere this year. They've gone through so many injuries to Markelle Fultz, Jonathan Isaac, guys lost for the year. Their youthful core that was going to help propel them to another playoff team, they're likely out of the playoff picture. They've got Nikola Vucevic, who is a fantastic all-star level player, and then they have Gordon. That's probably their second most talented player. As far as Gordon to Miami is concerned, I don't know what to make of it. It's not exactly an easy fit there. He's young, 25-ish. You know, 25 and a half at this point, actually. And still, he's injury prone. He's missed a lot of time over the course of his career. He's athletic, somewhat explosive, can make plays, shooting 40% from three. You look at it on the surface, it's a pretty good deal because he fits that same time frame as Bam Adebayo. He's your four moving forward. You don't have to worry about Kelly Olynyk. You don't have to worry about giving minutes to Precious Achiuwa or Andre Iguodala or Trevor Ariza. Gordon is your starting four. They've moved him all over the place in Orlando, and it has never worked out for him. From the three to the four, they still don't have a place for him because Jonathan Isaac was probably going to start at the four alongside Vucevic, and that would have bumped Gordon down to the three. Neither of them are at the right position. Isaac's probably closer to a five in today's NBA. But you got Vooch there. He's a traditional center. That changes your approach. As far as Gordon is concerned, yeah, I like the complement between him and Bam. Guys that can switch. Somewhat tenacious defender. A little inconsistent. And I don't watch Orlando as much as I have to because I don't cover the team. I don't have to be in the Amway Center anymore. Now that I've moved back to Miami. So it's not quite watching, but I did see the team for years. And Gordon always seemed to have something missing. Like the term potential should have Aaron Gordon's picture in it in the dictionary. Because he's just always been capable of so much more. And I don't know that he's ever quite figured it out. Now, I've written about this before. I like Gordon. I like talking to him. He's smart. He's interesting. He's funny. He's humble. Cocky, but he's a good player too. And at the same time, he's also gone through a really crap show, a really crappy system in Orlando with so many coaches and so much turnover. And again, being played out of position, you give him the stability of Miami, it might unlock him to an all-star form. I'm not being hyperbolic here. I think it's legitimate because of that talent and that potential if he stays healthy. And Miami has pressing concerns. Now, is Gordon the guy that's going to put you over the title contention? That's a huge issue, too. Is he the guy who finally says, you know, if he's unlocked here in Miami, and there is a potential that it could happen even within this season. I should add that Gordon's also under a contract for next year. $16.5 million, I believe. $18.5 this year for what's left of the season. And then $16.5 next year. That's the last year of his deal. Due for extension at that point in time. If Miami was able to trade for him or whatever team trades for him, then he would probably be extended by that team if he contributes at any kind of level. Look, he's been rumored to, I think, the Clippers, Denver, Portland, all the teams that are most interested. Gordon's a California guy, so it kind of makes a lot of sense there. But as far as his fit in Miami, you know, I don't know what you'd have to give up in order to acquire Gordon. Probably a Precious Achiuwa, probably a first-round pick, probably another starter-caliber player, maybe an Olynyk just to kind of, you know, make the salaries work. I don't know that you do it. I find him to be an upgrade over Olynyk somewhat if he's healthy. And is he enough to sacrifice other players, other assets, if you will, in order to get? I just don't see it happening. It's just not a move that on the surface makes a lot of sense to me. It's an interesting option, but it kind of begs the question what Miami's approach to this is all. I had to take a break while recording this. And of course, in the interim, reporting from Hardwood Paroxysm, our very own Matt Moore, talking about Orlando probably trading Aaron Gordon to the Boston Celtics for 2 first-round picks as part of a larger deal. They might be acquiring Evan Fournier as well. So they're clearing the decks over in Orlando. I'm not sure if Vucevic is going to be included as part of that deck-clearing move. I don't anticipate that being the case. But I also find it difficult to believe that they're willing to trade Fournier. I know he's a free agent or maybe a player option or team option next season. But either way, just strange move. But back to Miami's rationale through all this, and it's kind of hard to picture. Again, for Orlando, a deal with Miami probably doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. But Miami's approach is, what are they looking for? Do they want to acquire a player to push them all over the hump now to make the most of this season for Jimmy Butler? I think that's a big part of it. That's probably why they're most often linked to a deal for the Toronto Raptors. Even as I'm recording this, the Raptors in the process of losing to the Houston Rockets, a team that had lost 20 straight games. So if there's a move to be made, the Raptors seem a lot more willing to make it happen. I'll talk about that next here on Locked On Heat. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, reality TV, real-time updated odds and props and almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website, use your mobile device, sign up today. Receive 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON. And if you're done winning a little extra money, go over to Built Bar. We've been telling you about it for a while. It's the best-tasting protein bar in the market. Amazing low-calorie, low-sugar, high-protein, great taste. 100% chocolate on all their bars. Now's the time to find out which Built Bar is the best, because it's Built Bar Madness. Today's matchup is an interesting one. Coconut brownie chunk versus lemon almond cheesecake. I got to be honest with you. I wasn't sure what to expect from the coconut brownie chunk. Normally don't like that pairing. Turned out it was a lot better. And I shouldn't have been surprised. A lot better than I expected. But when it comes to this particular matchup, I'm leaning towards the lemon almond cheesecake. Just tart enough. Not too tart, still sweet, still delicious. Again, you take a bite of this, you don't even know you're eating a protein bar. It's that good. So make sure that you go ahead and vote. Go to BuiltBar.com or go to @bar_built on Twitter. Remember to use the promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order. That's LOCKED15 to get 15% off your next order at BuiltBar.com. Check back to see who's won today's matchup and who will become the best tasting protein bar of them all. Get more analysis on the top prospects available in this year's NBA Draft with the Locked On NBA Draft Podcast. Scouting reports, draft rumors, mock drafts, full coverage of March Madness 4 days a week from credentialed draft experts. Subscribe today. Follow Locked On NBA Draft. So this isn't really a question, more of a comment. Josh Watson writes in, "We lack talent on this team." And I have to say, I don't quite agree. I've had this discussion before, quantifying talent seems impossible to do. Like, I'm not sure what, you know, this was the argument I made during last year's playoffs when you go up against the Boston Celtics and they've got, I don't know, a million top five draft picks. They've got talented free, you know, players like Gordon Hayward and Marcus Smart, you know, all these top 10 guys that they've picked or acquired in various ways. The more talented team, it didn't matter. Where do you rank talent? What is talent? Now, talent seems like it would be this combination of natural athleticism, but I don't buy it either. Just because they're not, they don't stand out necessarily. There are so many different factors as to why a player doesn't get drafted, why they slip in the draft. I think even today's scouting is so difficult. The draft is such an inexact science that I don't know how you rate or rank, evaluate talent. What makes you a top first pick? Like, yes, there could be a few players that stand out far and above everybody else. Zion Williamson, for example. That's a generational talent. You don't find that very often. Other than that, you know, people were besmirching LaMelo Ball. I don't think they thought he might translate into an NBA-level talent. He's been pretty good. He's a runaway choice for the Rookie of the Year, despite the fact that he is going through a season-ending injury right now that leaves the Charlotte Hornets much more vulnerable than they had been before, although they won tonight's matchup against the San Antonio Spurs without Ball in the lineup. So I just don't know how you evaluate talent, and Miami, I think, has enough of it. They've got really top-end players, of course, in Bam and Jimmy Butler. Butler, not a top 15 draft pick, but certainly a top 15 player in the NBA. I think he's talented enough. Bam is certainly up there as well. You've got other players that were lottery picks. I think there's enough talent here. It's just sometimes the fit doesn't work. Sometimes you get too much talent. Sometimes you get bad coaching decisions, not just necessarily with the Heat, but around the league. So I don't know how you evaluate talent. Is Kyle Lowry talent? Is Norman Powell talent? You know, he slipped in the draft because he was a four-year player at USC, I want to say. I wrote a story about him years ago. I should know this, but either way, are these the guys? Is this what you evaluate as talent? Look, this isn't knocking you, Josh, and thank you, of course, for writing a question and sending it in. But as far as the league, talent seems very hard to label, rank, and I'm not sure that Miami doesn't have the talent. What they don't have right now is a versatile player defensively and a playmaker from the guard position. So that's part of the problem. And their shooting has been off. Cynthia writes in, none of the guards is helping the Heat succeed. When will the Heat trade one of them for someone that will actually make open shots? Probably soon. Probably within 48 hours of my recording this and you're listening to it. TZA Mac asks our last question of the show. Is this the season to be patient with the development of young assets, or is this the season to go all out, full on board to improve the roster for a title run? We can't expect rookies and sophomores to contribute consistent production, especially in the playoffs. Now, that's a good point, TZA. And I think it's also important to say that within the context of the season, it's harder to expect rookies and sophomores to make those kind of contributions too, especially when their numbers are impacted by inconsistent playing time, COVID, and all the other factors that don't even necessarily impact past seasons but are a factor this year. Are you going to get that kind of second-year bounce from Tyler Herro, or did we already see that in the Orlando bubble as he regressed somewhat? You know, is KZ Opala going to be a factor? I'll put it as this. As much as all these young players have potential, not just in Miami, but around the league, I don't think their growth is a determining factor or a preventative factor for the front office. If they see a move that can help them win now, they're going to do it. I'm not sure if this is where I was going. I started off the idea about this show and about this segment that it would be this kind of great all-encompassing evaluation of Miami's front office and their decision-making process. And I just don't know that we have any kind of sort of clear path. But my feeling is that if there's a win-now move, they're going to do it. And I think Kyle Lowry and Norm Powell, despite the fact that it's being rumored out there, if there's a chance that Miami actually can get that deal done, it probably helps them much more than whatever Tyler Herro could be a year or two down the road, or what Kendrick Nunn is, or whether Precious Achiuwa eventually develops an outside shot, or you know whether or not KZ Opala ties it together, whether or not Duncan Robinson becomes back to the incendiary shooter he was last season. You know, you asked that question before, who do I pay, Kendrick Nunn or Duncan Robinson? I don't think you wind up paying either of them, to be honest with you. I think Duncan is probably gone to a team that's willing to pay much more than Miami might be, because they've already seen their limitations and because they've been proven that they can find other shooters. They were able to turn around Wayne Ellington. They were able to turn around other players. I think they can do it again. I think they can find somebody else. They got Duncan Robinson to become an incredible shooter. Historically good. Now, can you duplicate his one season of success? Probably not. Is Max Strus going to wind up being that guy next season? That would be a hell of a run for him, but a little unexpected. He's got that potential. I mean, I don't know how the Heat evaluate him in terms of whether or not they compare his shooting prowess to Duncan's. But he does seem like he could at least be a consistent shooter. Maybe he can incorporate, maybe he can fine-tune his body some way. I don't know. I don't know what the next steps for him are. He doesn't have the same size as Duncan, so it's a little difficult to associate that he's going to be able to reach the same level. But overall, I'd say Miami is looking to win. And maybe that's not the right move either. you want to make the most of this year for Jimmy, but this whole timeline of the 4 years that Jimmy Butler signed here has been thrown off because you made the finals unexpectedly in year one. In year two, it was about continuing to build off that internal development. Tyler was supposed to take another leap. Other young players were supposed to take another leap. Bam was supposed to take a leap. And you were just kind of standing pat until you acquire a superstar this offseason. Now that superstar isn't available, that impact, that growth hasn't progressed at the level that you expected it to. And now maybe year three is not a guarantee. Plus, they built a superpower in Brooklyn. That changes things. I mean, look from Miami's own history. In 2010, how much of the league went and altered their path a little bit? This is a historical process for the NBA. Golden State impacted winning in the Western Conference. Teams were blown up as a result of their incredible ascension into, you know, the superpower that they were. As for the big three in Miami, I mean, they forced Philadelphia to tank for multiple seasons just to be a early round exit. Now, they don't necessarily look like that this year, but that's kudos more to Daryl Morey and some to Doc Rivers more than anything else, because they transformed that roster around. That wasn't the process. They got them to this point, and I made that argument before, but they're still not all that. They're not proving anything. They haven't proven a damn thing, except that they've lost a lot of games over the last 10 years, certainly much more than Miami has. I don't know. I think you try to go all in. I think you try to take a chance now and hope that whatever you make this year, whatever moves you make, you can add more. You never know. You have to take that first step somehow. Miami always has to have a plan. They've always been able to figure things out. They've made bad decisions. They're not a perfect franchise. No one is. But I still think that they're looking to improve as much as you possibly can. I don't know if Lowry's a move. I don't know if it's somebody else out there that we haven't associated with the Heat. They want to win. I just also don't know that they can. I look at Brooklyn, the way they're stacked right now, and Miami has significant issues. Can they be fine-tuned? Can Avery Bradley be a difference maker? Can Goran Dragic duplicate last year's late season success? If so, maybe you can get it done. Maybe you just make some additional fringe moves. Maybe you don't have to rely on depth as much if you blow it up in order to acquire Lowry and Powell or somebody else. It's just, it's hard to envision exactly how it's all going to tie together. You take a chance, though. Last year's success proved that it's, you're right there. They were two games away from knocking off the Los Angeles Lakers and two injuries to two key starters away from beating the Lakers, from sending LeBron home without a ring in Los Angeles, despite having two top five level talents. So there you go for lack of talent. They had more of it, and I still think Miami was a better team. Anyway, I'll keep you posted. Any updates, I will certainly report on those as quickly as possible with reaction to any moves that Miami makes. And just a reminder, you can always reach out to me via email at lockedonheat@gmail.com or via Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Be sure to please subscribe to the show if you haven't already and leave a review. I'm Dave Vermill, signing off and thanking you as always for your support.